Hello and welcome to Film School. I'm Jacob.
And I'm Ben.
And we both love movies.
Getting better.
Yeah, that, but maybe on my end it wasn't better, but if it was good on your end, then I'm fine with that.
Honestly, I trust your internet more than mine.
Well, right now I'm on like interim internet. So I'm trying to remember where I was last time we recorded the podcast. I think last time we recorded, I was staying at my grandma's house. I have since moved into a new place and we are right now living on the internet that the landlord is providing, but we will get our new 1 gig fiber internet in like a couple weeks, 2 weeks, something like that. So that'll be awesome. But yeah, that's where we're at right now.
Meanwhile, my family is waiting on fiber optics that should have gotten wired out here in 2007.
Yeah, that's what happens on those like installation timelines, especially if you live outside of the city.
Yeah,
it's bad. I have a friend who similar thing where it's like it's been years since they were supposed to install internet out to where he lives now. Yeah. He lives in a completely different state, but I play video games with him and he will be on like a 4G hotspot essentially. Like that's how he plays. That's how he like uses the internet, is he has like a mobile hotspot that he uses. Wow. Which is really expensive and inefficient, but
yeah,
that's what they haven't brought out the internet to where he's at. Apparently, supposedly it's supposed to happen soon, I think. But yeah, man, those project timelines almost never get done on time.
I was trying to get my mom to sign up for a beta test of Starlink and she had reasons why she didn't want to.
Sure.
The traitors going for Biden's plan.
Yes. Well, besides bad internet, how are you doing, Ben? It's been a bit.
Yeah, doing quite well, thank you. I appreciate it. Went to the doctor, got my chronic cough issue fixed. If for our listeners, you don't know that I have a chronic cough issue because both of us have
because of editing.
Yeah, repeatedly had to snip out me going in the background. But it is a thing I have had to deal with, and I finally figured out it is a severe allergy, and I will be getting it fixed quite soon.
Very nice.
And also, I don't know, this is shameful to admit, but me being on Facebook dating is working out quite well.
Oh, wow.
I have a new friend on there, and she's very nice, and I'm looking forward to seeing her sometime soon. But how about
that's
you?
Awesome.
Thank you. What have you been up to besides moving?
Yeah, moved in, and that's been really fun. I've been working a lot. It's getting hot outside, and we are doing an outdoor framing job. I think I've said this before on the podcast. My day job is doing construction, like home construction stuff. So we are putting in an addition on a house, and it is out in the hot sun. But like when it gets this hot, like today when we were recording, it got up to 106. We quit early when it gets that hot. Like we get out there and we'll be working. And then if once it gets to kind of that like 130, 230 time frame, when it gets to 100 or above, it's just kind of like, okay, yeah, like we're not going to be very efficient. We're just going to get dehydrated and burnt up. Let's go.
I mean, it's straight up dangerous at that point, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't think about that. You know, I knew that your day job was construction work for your uncle, but I was like, oh man, it's horrible outside recently. I didn't even think about that. You have to be out there.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
At least I do housekeeping inside.
Sure. No. Yeah. It's part of the job, but it pays well, and I like my coworkers, so
it's been good.
It's been good there. And then other than that, I mean. One benefit of we're at a job site that's pretty far away from where we live right now. So like even from Lincoln, it's about 40 minutes away. Uh-huh. So my brother, who also works with us, has been staying in Lincoln for a while. And that's been really nice to be able to hang out with him.
Yeah.
And just spend that time with him. So yeah, it's been good. I've been good.
Well, that's good to hear. All right, let's what's our first thing? Diving into movie news, correct?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay, why don't you go first? I think you have a more interesting one.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think all movie news is interesting, but something interesting that I recently learned about is that Peter Jackson of Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit fame is also a bit of documentary fame. He made a World War I documentary called They Shall Not Grow Old, which I haven't seen all of, but I've seen parts of. And I've also know people who have seen it and said it's really good. But he is making a Beatles documentary for Disney Plus.
Wow. That's interesting.
And it is coming out sometime this fall. And one major draw of it is that he has been able to piece together and restore footage of the Beatles' last performance together as a band. And the entire performance will be in the documentary. So that's really cool. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that this was happening until like yesterday, and then kind of found this, I think it's a Variety article, the Vanity Fair article, kind of about it. But yeah, it's really neat. I it's one of those things where like I'm not like the world's biggest Beatles fan, but I like respect the music and I know a lot of their songs and stuff. So I probably will be watching this documentary eventually when it comes out.
That's really fascinating. It's so odd to imagine Peter Jackson working for Disney, like the brands.
Yeah, I know. It is weird.
The kind of stuff he makes and the kinds of stuff Disney, you know, puts forth really kind of have. They're not like. It's not like he can't, but it's kind of off-brand for him. Like, he's a Warner Brothers, you know, HBO kind of guy. And Disney, that's interesting. I wonder why, like, what Disney's modus operandi behind, like, yeah, let's green light Peter Jackson's Beatles film. Like, out of all the companies to be like, yes, we'll do that. Why Disney? That's kind of an odd choice for them.
I think part of it is that, you know, that World War One documentary he did got critically acclaimed like across the board, and it was very successful. Like, the people who watched it were like, wow, I really gotten like to experience and see World War One in a way that I haven't before. Oh. And so I think that like they saw that magic was kind of there and kind of were like, oh well, if you know, if Peter Jackson comes pitching his documentary, and the documentary is not about World War One, but it's about like the most famous band ever, like, why would you not pick that up? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense from a business standpoint. So fun and or not so fun fact, depending on your outlook on the whole thing. So background for this fun fact, I was watching parts of The Social Network on YouTube before I just straight up watched it. Like, it was at a time where I couldn't afford or didn't have Netflix, and I was like, I want to watch The Social Network. So I looked up full movie, and like some guy had put together a playlist where you got the gist of most of the movie.
Nice.
And the last bit, there's a Beatles song that plays right before the credits play, where it's like, baby, you're a rich man, baby, you're a rich man now. And then it plays as the credits go. And all the comments were people complaining about how they couldn't find any Beatles music on YouTube because the clip was from like 2011 or so.
Okay.
And I recently learned that Apple, like the company Apple, completely bought up all the Beatles music and ruthlessly scrubbed every last non-copyrighted, non-licensed piece of Beatles music from the internet in like 2011 and 12 when they bought the Beatles library. And I didn't know this, and I was like, why are all these comments complaining about the Beatles music not being around? I've heard the Beatles music. Turns out Apple does not allow any Beatles music to be played on any piece of internet media and have a ruthless algorithm to search it down, you know, ever since they bought the library. And I was like, huh, that's really interesting. It's kind of like how Michael Jackson technically owns the rights to, I think, like some Broadway show. It's very strange how different properties change hands like that. It's kind of interesting to watch.
Copyright and the rights to content is extremely interesting, especially in the internet age. That's really strange. I didn't know that.
Yep.
What is your piece of movie news?
My piece of movie news, it's a little antiquated. Like, this was being talked about like a few months ago. But I was just recently getting into it now because the movie just came out, I'm pretty sure. The new Pixar film, Luca, which is being likened to the best work of Ghibli alum and founder Miyazaki.
Very, very similar vibes from what I've heard. I haven't watched it yet, but
the artists working on it at Pixar were really disappointed that it didn't come out in theaters, or it wasn't like planned for a big theater release. I think like people weren't counting on the pandemic kind of coming to a close as soon as it did.
Sure.
So I think now it might actually come out in theaters, but the artists at the time were like, man, we really love these movies and working on them because we're anticipating all these people going to the theaters and experience and having like this big screen, you know, experience. And a lot of people are going to miss out on that, and that bums us out. And a bunch of artists were, you know, upset about it, and it was, you know, really lowering morale at Pixar. And then a bunch of Twitter people were really salty about it for some reason, and they were like, shut up, you get to work on a Pixar movie, what are you complaining about? And then a bunch of, like, okay, I don't want to get too political here, but a bunch of Twitter socialists were essentially like akinning their plight to like the 1% complaining about not having enough money or something.
Oh,
and I was
yeah.
like, I mean, they're just like regular Pixar artists that are kind of bummed out that people, you know, didn't get to see their movies in theaters. You fussing that it's like, but this is something about the lower class. It's like, okay, they're not like saying that you shouldn't be concerned about a pandemic or that other people's lives don't matter as much as a movie. They're just saying it's a bummer and we make these movies to be shown in theaters, and were kind of bummed out. And they weren't all the things that were being accused of, like elitism and classism, whatever else. I was like, not really. I mean, if I were making a movie and was excited to see it come out in theaters, and then it was revealed that theaters weren't going to be a thing for years, I would be kind of bummed out too. And it was kind of weird how many people were mad at that sentiment, and the types of people that were mad at that sentiment, as well as why. It kind of confused me. It was kind of like, hey, come on, I would be bummed about that, you know, if I were a storyboard artist or an animator or something. So yeah, that's kind of my whole ordeal.
Definitely. Yeah. Like the, yeah, people don't realize how long it takes to make a Pixar movie. It is such
nuts.
A long process from pre-production to final product. And these artists and these people who worked on it, like, they've been imagining this thing being seen in theaters and consumed in a certain way. Like, it's intended. The thing about these big budget movies is they're intended to be consumed in a theater, right? Like, there's like a Netflix movie that's made for Netflix is meant to be experienced on Netflix, on your TV, on your phone, whatever.
A laptop
versus,
of some
like,
kind.
Yeah, whatever. But these big budget movies are like, these are theater experiences. That's part of how, that's most of how they make their money back.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's totally, in my opinion, it's totally understandable for like an artist to be disappointed that like, hey, I made this thing, or I helped make this thing. I was one of many people who made this thing. And for some reason, these people who hold all the money and make all the legal decisions, but really didn't put in any of the work to make this movie, decided, actually, we're going to put you on our streaming service and not in theaters. I'd be pissed off about that too. Like,
yeah,
that's too bad. Like, is it a business decision that maybe makes sense for Disney? Maybe. You know what I mean? There's other factors
right
at play too. But if I was an artist, I would be disappointed.
And in all honesty, like, even as on the consumer side, you know, until I saw the trailers recently and like the poster, and I was reminded when it was coming out, I forgot Luca was a thing. And I would feel really bad. Like, if a Pixar artist heard me, you know, just regular kid on the ground, like, oh yeah, that thing's happening. Even if you're, especially if you're really passionate about it or something.
Sure.
So I really get it. And also, like you said, how the crazy amount of effort it takes to make these things. I think I read at one point that someone did the math and figured out that for one person to do all of the jobs involved in making a Pixar movie, like the movie itself, not like the marketing or the distribution or anything, it would take them, what did they say, 106 years? Or it was something nuts.
That's,
it was
not
like,
surprising.
It was like half a century or something. And I was like, wow, that's actually insane. So the fact that so many people come together.
That's the amount of man hours that are put into one Pixar movie. That's insane.
And in this industry, especially animation and filmmaking, time is money. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, that totally makes sense. I am intrigued to see that movie. Let me double check to see if it's out yet or not. That's the thing about these like streaming releases is you don't always know when things are like out yet, because there's not as much marketing push. June 13th, so it is already out.
Maybe it's on Premier Access. I swear to God, any one of the Disney Plus Premier Access releases that have happened, no one has said they're worth the extra price. Like, maybe Luca is, but like when Raya came out, everyone's like, should you pay the $30? No. Should you watch Mulan for $30 early? No. Should you watch Cruella for $30 early? No. So like, it's funny that they've came up with this Premier Access function and no one used it. Like, no one cared. It's kind of funny.
Dude, I'll probably see Luca, and I should see Raya, because I actually heard really good stuff about Raya. I don't imagine myself seeing Cruella. Like, I legitimately,
do you remember when we were watching, we were both sitting in the theater waiting for Godzilla versus Kong to play, and the trailer was so obviously trying so hard to be Joker. We were like, wait a minute, Cruella is just Disney's Joker, but they grabbed the puppy skinning lady. And they made an origin. What is happening? I've heard that Emma Stone's performance is actually pretty good, but it's one of those good performance, but why does this exist kind of deal.
There was one critic that I tend to appreciate his takes a lot. Like, when he says something, I take it pretty seriously.
Uh-huh.
There was one guy, one critic like that. I guess I'll just say it. Houston Coley is his name. He's a great YouTuber and stuff. But he like holds to the opinion that it is a camp masterpiece. He's like, it's cheesy and it's insane and it doesn't need to exist, but I have a hell of a time watching it and I enjoy it. So I'm just like, you know what? I respect that.
Interesting. It's good to know, actually.
Yeah. But speaking of watching things and streaming, this week we you prompted us to watch season two of Love, Death, and Robots.
Yes.
Which, for those at home who don't know what that is, could you explain to them maybe what Love, Death, and Robots is?
Yeah, I have some background on this because I was very invested in and intrigued by the first season. So back in the 80s, there was this vaguely obscure show called Heavy Metal, which was an anime style sci-fi anthology. So it's like a show where there's this little episode that has like a sci-fi story. And then the second episode doesn't have anything to do with the first one. It's just another sci-fi story. That's what an anthology means. And Heavy Metal ran for maybe a season and then was canceled because it didn't go so well. But a bunch of modern producers and directors took a look at it and was like, hey, let's try that again. Another sci-fi anthology show. And David Fincher got involved in it and really loved the idea. So he produced almost all of it, like wrangled all the money, wrangled all the resources, got the studios in line, and he made the first season it released, and it was hit with a lot of critical acclaim. You know, people loved it. These little, there are 18, I remember logging onto Netflix and seeing there's 18 episodes of the first season. They're just little, you know, sci-fi, you know, I think max length is 20 minutes. Shortest length was like six, you know, these little sci-fi anthology stories that were released, and a lot of them were really good and people were praising them left and right. So then the second season came out. They were still working on it and the pandemic hit, and you can work on animation. You can still work on animation remotely. So I think that maybe some of, I'm going to detail some problems that I'll have with the second season pretty soon here.
Sure.
I think may have been caused by the lack of in-person, I don't know, maybe, but anyway, so they managed to finish them. And this season has a lot. So the second season of Love, Death, and Robots has a lot fewer episodes.
There's half, right?
Yeah, there's like eight. There's eight instead of 18. And I gave them a watch. And I will definitely say that this season, compared to the first, is a disappointment. I was
really
not super impressed. There were a few. Okay, do you kind of just want me to go into my whole thing where I kind
go
of
ahead.
Describe?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Do it.
So there are, you know, eight episodes in this whole thing. So instead of giving an independent review of all of them, I'll kind of, you know, just kind of touch on things that I remembered about the whole thing in general.
We can do whole thing and then dive into. I have the episode list pulled up. We can dive into individual episodes after we both kind of give our thoughts on the whole thing.
Sure. All right. So whole season overall, I kind of felt like compared to the first season, you know, the first season took like these really interesting sci-fi concepts and played with them in such unique ways. A lot of them are based on short stories. So they would just take a short story and, you know, translate it into a visual medium, which was a really smart idea, in my opinion. And a lot of the stories they played with and chose and picked out from the library of all things you could go out there were really unique. And I was like, whoa, that's really interesting. I've seen that played with, but not to that level. It was almost Rick and Morty-ish in a way, like the smarter side of Rick and Morty, you know, instead of all the fart jokes or whatever. Rick and Morty genuinely can take sci-fi concepts and be like,
be very high concept.
Yeah, let's take these to the next level. And that's what the first season definitely did. And this second season was just like, what if sci-fi thing was done again and also penis? And I was like, wow, okay, sure. So, yeah, whole thing, I feel like they didn't go high concept enough, and also, but I will say both seasons deliver really well on the visuals. But I think the first season, because there were more episodes, delivered harder on the different varieties of visuals. This second season hits a huge issue that actually is pulled straight out of the pages of the Animator Survival Kit, written by Richard Williams, who, if you don't know who that is, was the animation supervisor on Who Framed Roger Rabbit. If that gives you any clue as to how good of an animator he is, trained under Milt Cowell, man is a master at his craft. He had this. The Animator Survival Kit is half like actual animation techniques. Like, here's how to actually draw the thing to make the thing move. Mm-hmm. And then he just kind of has his musings on the art form in general. And one of his musings, he said that, you know, if you're going to choose to animate something, this has really shaped my philosophy in terms of like to judge. It's the source for would Ben Reed make this in live action or animation or whatever, where he's like, if you're going to animate something, you should never find yourself asking, why didn't you just take a photograph? Because if you're finding yourself asking that, there's no reason to animate this. And almost all of the episodes of Love, Death, and Robots season two did not give any good reason for why they were photorealistic CGI and not just live action with visual effects. Like none of them made a good case for like, yes, that needed to be a 3D thing and not a person superimposed on a matte painting. Almost none of them made a good case for it. So I was just like, especially the last one, I was like, why was that? And why did you do that? So anyway, whole season, I think, did not go as high concept as they should have. Less impressive visually. Medium choices confusing. Not enough. I think that all of that overall, all those problems could have been solved if they literally just took more time. And this is something that in the age of internet, this is actually something I was thinking about recently where, you know, Vipsy Pop made a Has Been Hotel. You're not a huge fan, but I really am.
No, yeah. I am familiar.
I think it was very intelligent of her, of Vipsy Pop, to be like, yeah, let's make my Hell of a Boss show in between Has Been Hotel being picked up and made as a full season, because the greatest currency in the internet age is relevancy. Are you going to be remembered? And, you know, even that internet culture bleeds into how people watch other things that aren't necessarily considered internet and is more in the TV section, kind of like Netflix. But people's, you know, appetite and tendency to be like, ooh, I want to consume something I remember, you know, oh, this was a thing 3 months ago, that's still new, that's still hot, that's still fresh. Love, Death and Robots, or at least the producers, are probably like, okay, this show was a huge buzz when it came out in 2019, it's 2020, we're working on the next season, and then a pandemic hit, we need to rush these out fast so people don't go, Love, Death and Robots, oh yeah, that thing. So I think that if they literally just took more time to work on what they had and make it more interesting, more high concept, play with the ideas instead of just going, yeah, monsters again, yeah, just get that done, you know, if they made more of them and if they made what they had more interesting, I think could have put it more on par with season one. So yeah, I think that the main issue is just come up with these ideas and then take them to the next level, which could have been done with more time, and then also more time to just make more of them. Overall, that's my general, like, yeah, that's my thoughts. What did you think?
Sure. Well, so for context, you showed me season one of Love, Death, and Robots. Mm-hmm. And what we did was you just sat me down and showed me your favorite episodes, because there's so many of them.
Yeah, there's
18.
And
then after we sat down and you showed me them, I, over the course of time, would randomly watch some other ones, but I don't know if I ever watched all of them.
Yeah.
So I had seen a decent amount of season one, but not all of them, I don't think. It's one of those things where it was spread out over a course of time that I would just kind of be like, oh yeah, that's a thing, and kind of watch one randomly.
Uh-huh.
But obviously for this, watched all of season two. I have, I think, much more positive thoughts than you as far as just, I just enjoyed myself. I basically sat down in front of my TV and turned on the first episode and watched them all the way through. And I just had a good time. I agree with your points about, like, there's these photorealistic CGI ones that, like, would have been perhaps even cooler in live action. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't, they looked like video game cutscenes.
Yeah.
And they didn't justify exactly why they needed to be CG or why they needed to be animation. Totally agree there. However, I had a great time with, like, the 2D animated one, Ice.
One
was super fun to me.
That's a
good
one.
The modded people and then running away from the whale that's breaking the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that was super cool to me. When I watched that one, I was like, dang, that's what I watched Love, Death, and Robots for.
Yeah.
This really cool animation style, this kind of simple and fun sci-fi concept, and then just like a well-made sort of chase scene that takes up most of the film. Like, it's not like, did it make me like scratch my head and really think about the future and ponder moral questions? No. But was it just a fun short film that was really visually pretty? Yeah, and I enjoyed that.
And I definitely will say that Ice was, out of all my, you know, critiques I just served out, that's one of the exceptions to the rule. Ice was top tier. Like, that's what I expect from this kind of, you know.
Sure, sure. So, but yeah, overall, I enjoyed it. Now, there were a couple ones, and this, I guess, for me to talk about it, I guess it might be easier for me to go episode by episode, but I'll still try to give my overview first. I just enjoyed it. I had a fun time. Like, when I finished the season, I was like, that was time well spent. I got to watch some cool, interesting shorts that were fun, and for the most part, I enjoyed them. There were, like I said, there were a few stinkers, and if we want, we can start going episode by episode now, because I think it's going to be easier for me to give my thoughts individually. But as far as like what I thought of it compared to the first season, I didn't love the first season as much as you did, which we kind of have talked about before. I thought it was fine and I thought it was good, but I never was like super, super into it. And I think that's because I never took the time to just sit down and watch a bunch of them in a row. Uh-huh. And I think that that's the ideal way to watch this, is kind of like binging a whole season.
Uh-huh.
But either way, we can just kind of go episode by episode. So the first one, sorry,
hold on real quick. Warning. So I didn't know this. But apparently the way Netflix orders that show specifically is that, like, you know, each order is different for certain people. So, like, when I say episode one of season one, Love, Death, and Robots, I'm imagining three robots, those three robots that are going through this post-apocalyptic city. The order is different for everyone. But once you log in and, like, officially click on Love, Death, and Robots for the first time on Netflix, your order is always the order they're going to be in. It doesn't shuffle every time you come back. So for each person, the order is individualized. So instead of us going, the third episode, the so-and-so episode, because Netflix orders it different for you than it does for me. So let's go on the order of whatever you have pulled up. So let's go.
I have episode one. The IMDb list. Yeah.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So let's go off of yours to make sure that we're consistent.
Yeah. Automated customer service.
Ah, yes. That was the first one for me too. Cool. Do you want me to kind of give my thoughts first?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So I thought that the highlight of this one, like the idea of, oh, the robots rise up and, you know, are evil now, that isn't very new. But to me, the comedy this one serves makes up for it. Like the enthusiastic, like customer service guy who's like, do you want to sacrifice your pet? You know, if you don't, the pet certainly would sacrifice you. Like, that's really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And I think, and what I thought was really interesting is that I looked up some reviews on YouTube of this new season. And someone pointed out it's a really quiet line that kind of gets like overthrown by some sound effect at the time. But it's just like, in order to stop this, please sign up for our whitelist. So apparently the whole reason why the robot went insane and started trying to kill things is because the company that made them wanted to pay for a it won't kill you service.
Yes.
Which I didn't get at first. I was like, oh, okay. So I thought that one was kind of like, wow, they just rehashed the robots, but they're evil now thing with a funny bit. Yeah. And then when I read that, I was like, okay, that puts it a little higher. So I thought that one was one of the mid-tier better ones. I thought it was fun.
Sure. I pretty similar on my end too. I thought it was funny. I thought once I started getting a feel for the tone, you know, that's when I started really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And then just the idea of like that they're her and this guy, her neighbor are going to be on the run forever the if they don't pay for the whitelist thing. Like that's really funny.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, I just thought it was fun. When it finished, I was like, okay, cool. That was enjoyable, but I wasn't like, wow, that was great. You know, that's kind of my thought on it. And then so next I have on the list is Ice, which we kind of both talked about a little bit.
Yeah.
But this was definitely in my top like three for this season for sure. I just like the animation style. I thought it was unique. The little world that they kind of established was fun. I thought even the movement felt very fluid. I don't know about you, what you felt about like how everything kind of flowed, but I just thought it was really cool.
Yeah, Dice is definitely in the top tier. I'm sorry that I spoiled it for myself and saw the trailer for this season because the big shot where the whales are breaching and you see them for the first time, I wish I would have saved that for the actual show and wasn't like, oh, here comes that shot.
Sure.
I will say you are definitely like, I agree with you in that the way that these shorts so quickly set up an understandable world. So you're never like, what's happening? You know, in the first, like even first minute, cause that short is like 15 minutes long. In the first minute you understand, okay, ice planet modded. Okay. They're genetically modified. Oh, look, he's doing really insane pushups. That means he's advanced. Yep. Like you get all that within the first 2 minutes. And I'm like, that is masterful visual. Like, okay, no over explaining nonsense. Here's what's happening. Here's what's going to happen. Boom. Happened. Cool. Done.
Totally.
Like that's so efficient. And I think that the smoothness of the animation matches the smoothness of the exposition.
Wow.
So this short served so many looks. Like it looked incredible. It was animated by the same guy who did Zima Blue of the last season. I would definitely say
that makes sense.
Like if I were to show anyone, like if I were to try to convince someone to watch the rest of the second season of this show, I would show Ice first.
You show him Ice.
Because
for sure.
It's excellent looking and it was well done. I love it. Top one, I think, for me.
Yeah. And I think with we're talking about the exposition thing. I like how I never felt like kind of like you said, I never felt like I was being over explained to, but I always felt like I had just enough information to basically get what was happening, but still be, oh, I wonder what's going to happen next. You know what I mean? So that to me, that's really good short film filmmaking, especially for sci-fi.
The only critique I had for this episode was like, I wish I had subtitles on. I decided not to, so it wouldn't get in the way of the nice visuals, because to me, that's a big part of this show. I wish I would have been able to understand like when someone was speaking with a heavy accent or when they were speaking with that kind of weird pseudo made up Spanish.
Where
they had bits where they kept calling the one who wasn't modded like a Gorax or something. And I was like,
what did they call him? Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
And I was like, what does that mean? Is that his actual name? Is that like a Spanish nickname they gave? And I wasn't sure. So that's the only thing, like, I wish I would have been able to understand, like, kind of the words they were using every now and then, mm-hmm. but it was like, it wasn't enough for me to be like, this is distracting. I hate this, and turn it off, you know? So,
yeah, no, I get you. And when it comes to like fantasy and sci-fi stuff, when they have their own made up terms, it can get confusing if you're not like paying attention, like, or if you're not, if you don't have very good speakers and you're, you know, whatever that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Next I have on the list is Pop Squad, which is the one about Ooh. Unregistered offspring and the detective dude. This personally was my favorite of the season. I thought that the, now I get, I see your photorealistic CGI criticism, and I will raise you a, I don't care. I really love the story and I really love the cinematography.
This one, out of the ones that are like, why was this photorealistic? This one had the most reasons. So out of like, for me, for all of, so like, if I were to take that criticism online, like, why was this mm-hmm. photo real, and pick one from this season where I'm like, that doesn't really apply here, it's this one. This one had good reasons to be photo real CG, you know. I think this one's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really liked the sci-fi world that it built, even if the world is sort of a combination of like, okay, put together Elysium and like a logical conclusion of where China's birth control practices can take it. Combine those things and you get this world. Like, it's not the most like, whoa, I've never thought of that before kind of world.
Yeah.
But the character, the story, the way that it's told, and like how you get into the mind of the main character and how he's questioning what like the establishment is and what he's really doing, I think is extremely well done. There's one shot in this that is my favorite shot of the entire show. Uh-huh. And it is literally, he gets shot at. He has this, the main character has this realization, like, and he freezes. He gets shot at by another character, and he does not move a single muscle. He just has this expression on his face of, oh crap, what am I doing here? And he does not move a muscle, and the bullet just whizzes right by his face, cuts his face, and he just freezes there. And I think a lesser filmmaker would have done that in slow motion, or done like some sort of bullet time effect where the camera moves and you see it dramatically whiz by his face. Yeah. But it was just a standard medium close-up reaction shot where a bullet whizzed by his face and cut him. And to me, that is just like the best show of restraint and emotion at the same time from a filmmaker.
Nice.
That is in this. Anyway, I thought that shot was great. I thought the story was great. I thought the ending was great. I thought it was great. Anyway,
I think I would put this one in my, like, if I were to order from best one that I really loved to this would be number two spot.
Okay. Okay.
I think that this one definitely justifies its photo reel, 'cause like the environments are photo reel in a lot of ways, but they aren't, like, they don't exist in real life, which is a problem that I have with the whale one, where it's like, you could have just filmed this. Why did you make this virtually? This one has unique environments that don't exist in real life that probably, you know, it would look odd, you know, juxtaposed with a real person. I think that this sort of justifies its photoreal CG. Like you said, I really do think that, like, the emotion and the, you know, the virtual photography, like when he walks up to that woman's farmhouse kind of hidden in a bunch of broken buildings with like a plane in the background, I was like, that's a cool shot. I think that this shore definitely does go above and beyond. And like, you know, I love the shots where they're up like in that kind of Elysium style, you know, the upper crust area.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed about the world building is that I was like, wait a minute, is this a prequel to Star Wars? You've got the it's very Coruscant in nature. You know,
it is very the
dungeon down below's with all the pillars and stuff, and then you've got the upper, you know, above the clouds, you know, rich people
and the speeders and everything where they go. Yeah.
So yeah, I think most of the stuff I would say is something, you know, I would be repeating from you. So yeah, I would say this one's one of the top ones. Storytelling, very efficient, you know, beautiful thing. I love the scene where they're in the farmhouse with the woman, and like the little girl is just playing, and she's so cute, and the guy whose job is to kill these little kids is like, she's cute. That's why I'm smiling at him. I'm like, oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. So
definitely.
Yeah, for all the same reasons you listed, top two for me, like, you know, second place.
Nice. Next, I have Snow in the Desert, which is the one about the guy named Snow and the beautiful stranger named Harold saves his life, and she reveals her own plans for him. Wait, I'm just reading a little IMDb description.
Her name is Harold?
Harold? H-I-R-A-L-D? I don't know, man.
Okay, so I thought, like, Harold and the purple crayon.
Harold. Oh, yes, Harold. But Snow in the Desert, what did you think?
One of those that, jeez. Okay, so this one's like a 5 out of 10, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, I think this one tries to do too much, where, like, yeah, it has a lot of pieces of world building, all of which have to be crammed into, like, 15 minutes, and I think if it were to be good, I would need to spend more time with each character, and I would need to kind of know a little more about how things work. I think that although, like, I was never confused, but I was kind of rolling my eyes at certain cliches every now and then, where I was just like, oh, look, he meets the woman, and she's like, I want to help you, and he says, sure, for some reason. And he doesn't have much of a personality. He's just kind of like the rogue one in the desert who is a rogue and stuff. So it just kind of seemed like a half done version of other way cooler things, and a lot, and also Love, Death, and Robots, kind of like one of the critiques it runs into from people who don't like it is like, man, this show does not like let up on reminding you that sex is a thing. Like, not every story needs it. And this chick was just like, I'm in a bang desert Santa. And I'm just like, okay, great. So Love, Death, and Robots is doing its thing again. Yes, we know. I thought it was cool. The reveal that she was a robot was interesting. The the visuals are nice, if albeit a little like, okay, you could have just had real people in a CG environment here. And also the sound effects are really good, but it didn't really stick out. It was just kind of a big casserole of half-finished versions of things that have been done better elsewhere.
Yeah.
Didn't regret seeing it. Thought it was fine. Eh. Yeah, that's me.
Yep. That pretty much the same thing from me, too. I thought it was very pretty. And I liked some of the concepts in it. For example, the high-tech day tent I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, that was cool.
But like, other than that, and then some, I think, well-choreographed fight scenes, I thought it was not great. Like, you know, kind of like you said, the character relationships of just like, oh, yes, and now we have sex. Like, that's like, what? Okay. And then just like the world building felt very like too quick, almost like it was like things were being revealed just as they became important. Like, and it just, this was one where the world building felt awkward to me, where like, you know, things that were important to the plot and important reveals were not really established beforehand. And then just kind of like when they happened is like, that's a part of the world. Wow.
Right.
Like, you know, like his whole, his reproductive system being, how he heals himself, and that being important to the rest of the world, that just kind of gets dropped, and you're just like, okay. And then same with like her being a robot or whatever. It's just kind of like, that's not pre-established at all. It just kind of happens. So I don't know.
A thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it was fine. Like, I didn't hate it. I enjoyed watching it. I just was just like, oh, this is very surface levelly and just kind of feels awkward at times.
Yeah.
Just was
let me pull up that thing Jacob noticed with these two things in this episode that I was like, oh, that's great. Sometimes this is something that I specifically will do. I don't know if other people do this, but I know I do, is where like I'll watch a trailer of something or a movie or something, and there'll be a very specific piece of sound design that I will latch onto and be like, that sounded really good. And there's a bit where, like, you know how she like shoots the guy and then she gets shot, and then the guy like shoots her twice again. The sound of those two shots going into her again, even though he thinks she's dead, had these really satisfying, like, you know, paired with the laser gun. And I was like, that sounds awesome. And then there was that other establishing shot where it's nighttime, and she comes up to meet him. Harold comes to see Snow, and she's just like, I want to work with you. And he's like, sure, but we have to get moving because it's almost daytime. There's an establishing shot where you can see the night sky, and there's the matte painting that is the sky in the background has this kind of really unique kind of explosion looking nebula kind of faded into the stars. And I'm like, that's a really creative way to establish, hey, yeah, you can see a Milky Way like pattern in the sky, only it's not the Milky Way. It's something else that looks more exotic. And I was like, that's really cool. And I pointed to the sky on my computer screen. And I was like, good job, Matt Artist. You did an amazing job. And those are the only two things where I'm just like, yeah, if you wanted to hear the bullets going into the girl really cool and also see the sky, yeah, it's great. But aside from that, you can watch another movie and find pretty much the same stuff.
yeah, totally. That's funny. That's great that like those are very specific things that you noticed. Mm-hmm. Like that's
thank you.
And I'm sure the artist who made who you know the Foley artist who did those sounds and the skybox artist who did the matte painting are very happy to hear.
He appreciates me. I want to make friends with that man.
Yes, exactly. Well, the next one that I have on the list is the Tall Grass, which is the train one.
Oh yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. I thought it was very pretty. Once again, I liked the animation style, how it was like kind of like 2D painted on top of 3D models.
Yeah.
I thought that was really neat. But overall, it was just kind of a little horror short, like very, I don't know, cliche in a way where it's just like, don't go off the path. Guy goes off the path because it looks like very pretty and mysterious. But then there's something scary and he has to get back and he barely makes it. And then the person who advised him before is like, told you so. And then gets like an exposition dump of like, you know, every time it stops here, like, you know, it was fine. I thought it was very pretty. And I thought that the jump scares and stuff were like well done. But like, it was just very cliche and kind of forgettable. That's my opinion on it.
Yeah, I would say I actually put this one for the art style alone actually in my top like five or so.
Okay.
Because I thought that like some of the other shorts in this season had like really big questions that they did not answer that kind of put me in like, okay, that was dumb. Why did you not answer that question territory? I gave this short probably more credit than it deserves because it did actually just wrap itself up and was pretty straightforward.
Sure.
So I really love the animation style in this one. Like you said, the 2D on top of 3D. I was like, hey, at least it isn't just another video game cutscene short, you know?
Sure.
Which I appreciated. And also, I think that, like, again, I was reading reviews and watching reviews and some of the comments in the reviews of this season. And some people said that that the main character in this one is a composite of Edgar Allan Poe, H.P. Lovecraft, and some other like cosmic horror author from the time period that it's clearly set in. And I was like, oh, so more thought and research went into this than I thought. And also, when like he has his newspaper, there is an article in there that talks about Edgar Allan Poe. So I was like, okay, it's a really creatively, and also like if you pause any one of those frames, I could definitely believe that like one of those frames could have been a painting, you know, painted in the same time period it was set in. So I was like, okay, that was an intentional choice. So I think some of the like interesting artistic research behind why they did what they did kind of puts this one a little higher up for me, I guess. So if you didn't know the background information, it's more just like, okay, yeah, the monsters, they do a thing, don't go off into the woods at night. It's kind of dumb. But the more I learned about it, the more I was like, okay, they put more thought into that than I thought. And the other thing that I will criticize this about it is the monster like design is so uncreative. Mm-hmm. It's just like, let's make a skinny person who is white and has fangs. I mean, the Stranger Things Demogorgon is cooler than that. At least he has a flower for a face, you know?
Sure.
So I think, like, if you're going to make an animated show, you know, that has sci-fi horror stuff and this cosmic, you know, nature kind of stuff, I think you should definitely, like, you know, make it some like weird spidery looking thing where like it's
take advantage of the animation aspect.
Yeah, exactly.
Too. Like, make it
like,
strange.
Don't just make a pale, skinny dude who's kind of muscly and has fangs. Like that's the most basic choice I've ever seen. Oh, he has no mouth, but also can roar. That's spooky. Like, come on.
Yeah.
So I think they should have been more creative with their monster design. I wish that like when it's revealed, it would have been some like bioluminescent crawling thing. But the glowing I thought was really interesting. And the glowing is just, it's the moonlight off the white skin. And I was like,
sure,
that's it. And also, that's what the monster looks like. How disappointing. So I think this could have gone from a 7 out of 10 to a 9 or 10 out of 10 if they made an interesting, cooler looking monster. And I don't think the simplistic storytelling, like if it's not, if it's kind of a problem for you, like I get it, but I think that it's simplistic, like, okay, this is just a little love letter to cosmic horror is fine for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this could have gone from a, you know, 6 to 7 out of 10 to a 9 out of 10 if they just made a cooler monster and then just kind of went from there and maybe added a few more little twists to it. But this one was good for me. This was in my top 5.
It's well executed. Like, for what it is, I will say that it's very pretty and it's well done. I was just kind of like, I knew what was going to happen before it happened. That was kind of my thing, which, you know, in some cases is totally fine. Like, if you're just there for the journey and like to enjoy the ride, then like totally. It just wasn't necessarily for me. But this next one is definitely in my top three all through the house.
Is it the Christmas one? Yes.
Yes.
I love this one.
I thought it was great. It's stop motion animated. It's this concept of, I guess, I mean, and we've been spoiling these throughout the whole thing, but I guess this one, the twist is like a very important part of it, but spoilers for all through the house. But the idea is that these kids, you know, see, like, hear Santa Claus on Christmas Eve night, putting their presents downstairs, and they sneak downstairs to catch a glimpse of him. And it turns out he's this horrific, terrible, giant
Lovecraftian monster.
and the monster approaches them and then barfs out presents and is like, stay good. And then like leaves, and they open up the presents and it's exactly what they asked for. And it's this idea that, like, you know, what if Santa, like, the image that we have of Santa is completely wrong. He's still good. Like, he still delivers presents to the nice and then whatever. And the joke at the very end is like, what if we were naughty? You know, like this, you know, but it's just this twist. You know, it's a subversion of expectations. I thought it was really, really fun and really, really funny. It was really short, too. Like, it just kind of played to the end of the joke and then stopped. And that was it. I really liked it.
Same here. This is probably, like, if I were to order it, it would be ice, this one, and then In the Tall Grass. Like, I think I might have said that some other one was second place. I'm being inconsistent. Anyway, sorry. But yeah, this one actually is not stop motion animated from the lighting.
It's CG, but it's it looks like stop motion.
Yeah, this is a classic Lego movie where you're like, is that stop motion? No, it's CG that mimics stop motion, that was something I was going to mention. It was such a wonderful touch for the CG artist to be like, okay, hey, let's make this like a stop motion short where we animate on twos every now and then, and also just like shift parts of the hair seemingly for no reason, but it makes it look like it was moved by a human hand. And I was like, that's such a nice touch. From the lighting, I can tell it's CG, but they decided to go the extra mile and be like, hey, let's make this feel like a cute Laika movie. That makes sense for Christmas. And I'm like, what a nice touch. I love it when artists do that, when they're like, let's add an extra little thing to make it like more cute or more fun and stylistic. I love it when they do that. And also, like you said, the shortness of this one really does play up the fact that it's basically kind of a long form little joke.
It's like a sketch. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought that the design of the monster was super creative and fun. It would have been cool if it was more Christmas style, like instead of the hands just being like, you know, red, it had like candy cane stripes or something. That would have been fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I was expecting when they're like, hey, Billy, what would have happened if we weren't good? When I saw the pan out in, you know, draw back, instead of just the monster snarling at the end and then it going to black, I was expecting to hear like a light turning on screams in the other house and then hearing a bunch of screams and thrashing to like imply what happens if you're a naughty kid.
I think that would have been
like horrifying, but also a good payoff to the joke. And it was like fine. And if it didn't happen, I was like, oh, we're going to hear some kid getting mauled, aren't we? And then it just went, ha-la-la-la. And then it ended. I was like, ah, well, that was fun anyway. So I think that the joke and the subversion of expectations, which, you know, I think is a step above the very straightforward, didn't really try much new nature of the rest of the season. It's a step above. So I think that it's, you know, bait and switch structure, how short it was and how clever the premise is. And also the little artistic touches definitely put this one in my top three or four.
Nice. Nice. Yep. Yeah. So next we have Life Hutch, which is the photoreal CG one that with Michael B. Jordan.
Oh yeah, that was Michael B. Jordan. Why didn't I realize that?
Yes. So this one is very much like mid-tier, like the definition of mid-tier to me.
Yeah.
As far as it's technically a well-executed short sci-fi story about a character overcoming a struggle. That's what it is. It seems like it would work much better as a scene within a larger movie. That's just my opinion. Like, it's a short film that would, in my opinion, like, if there was a better plot structured around this short film, I think it would work really well. But just by itself, It's very pretty. This is probably the only one of the quote unquote photoreal CGI ones here that I think legitimately looks photoreal. Mm-hmm. I'll give a little spoiler alert ahead, future spoilers, as far as just I'm planning on doing an ironic version of that thing Jacob noticed, where I just point out the fact that I thought that All Through the House was stop motion, and for the first 2 minutes of Life Hutch, I thought it was live action.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just, I guess that just shows how good the animation is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, very mid-tier, nothing actually wrong with it, just very generic and kind of, oh, that happened. Okay, cool. That's the end.
Right.
That's here, my thoughts, at least.
Here, to give my thought, I pretty much agree with you. I think it's actually a little below mid-tier, in my opinion. Here was my thought process throughout the whole thing. Okay, he crashed. All right, time to go find a hut. Okay, he's found the hut. Uh-oh, the robot's malfunctioning. Now he's going to hurt him, and the robot hurts him because he thinks he's a threat. And then it shows, like, the robot seeing him, and then doesn't do anything. And then sees his helmet move and smashes the helmet. And I was like, wait. He sees him still. Why is he attacking the helmet? And then the robot like looked at him and then went away. And I was like, doesn't it still see him as a threat? What's happening? And then the robot kind of moved elsewhere. And the guy like remembered back to what he was doing prior to, which none of that mm-hmm. information gives us anything interesting. Like, okay, yeah. So that's what he was doing. He was fighting an alien force. Why do we need to know this? His issue right now is the robot. It flashed back and then it came back. And the robot did a thing, still saw him, didn't do anything, and then used the flashlight. And it tried to destroy the flashlight beam and not him. And then he used the flashlight beam to sabotage it. And then he kills it. And I'm like, okay, what was happening? Why did it want to kill him sometimes and then wanted to get the flashlight beam in his helmet later? What's uh-huh. happening? So this was one of those that was definitely knocked down a peg from mediocre to pretty good to this isn't very good, where it just didn't answer some of its questions. Like, why was the mm-hmm. robot so inconsistent in when it wanted to hurt him and when it didn't? I was really confused. And then just the nonlinear flashbacks where I was like, I don't care what he was doing. He's got a robot to deal with. Stop that. So this sure. was it's the lower half for me. I didn't realize it was Michael B. Jordan for some reason, which I've seen Black Panther. I should have known. But I will say there were a couple shots where like the sweat on his brow and like the floor looks super, super real. And I was like, okay, wow, that's a good shot. But like you said, overall, lower mid-tier, what's happening? It's fine. You know, that's kind of my
yeah. I didn't really question the robot stuff because I was just like, it's malfunctioning. It's just doing random crap and it's very sure. dangerous. That was my thought process, but I totally get that the more that I think about it, the weirder it is. Mm-hmm. It's just very forgettable. Like besides the fact that it's Michael B. Jordan and besides the fact that, in my opinion, like I said, the first like 2 minutes, I legitimately thought it was like CGI with actual Michael B. Jordan on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, I, you know, besides those two things, it's very forgettable for me.
Yeah.
But next and last, ooh, we have The Drowned Giant, which I think for me was probably my least favorite. That idea works way better as like, I don't know, like a short story. The idea of like the fact that it was a short film almost felt unnecessary. I don't know. Uh-huh. I have more thoughts, but I'll let you go ahead and go first really on this one.
This one was peak. Like, this was me the whole time. Huh? And then at the end, that's it. those were my only emotional reactions to the whole thing. Uh-huh. This is one, like, you remember my criticism where I said, why did this need to be photoreal? You didn't need mm-hmm. to do this. This is peak, like, why did you do this? You could have just had a matte painting of some big guy on, you know, the beach and then had just mm-hmm. real people do it. Nothing interesting or fantasy-ish happened to the extent where it needed to be CGI. Like, uh-huh. why did you do this? That was a lot of effort. You did not need to expend. This is nonsense. And then also, like, I don't know. I was just bored throughout the whole thing. It's just this, you know, Scottish guy or British guy or something
mm-hmm.
going on about how he has these weird flowery metaphors for this giant. And then the guy yep. decays and people chop him up and then it goes away. I don't know. I looked through the comments of the reviews of this show and some mm-hmm. people were like, it's a commentary on death and like how we're all finite and we'll be forgotten or something. And I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, if you gave it a really generous read, maybe you could see that. Sure. But, and also the other suggestion is that the giant itself was actually just a whale the whole time, but the scientist uh-huh. sees him like a big human. So it's shown that way, but that's not actually what's happening. And I'm just like,
uh-huh.
Okay, well, that's kind of a strange. This one was just confusing and boring and was just like, why did you do this? Like, every level of decision as to what happened in this, as well as the production choices, I was just scratching my head at. Like, why is this photo real? What's happening? Is this going to lead anywhere? And then it just ends, and I'm like, oh, okay. And also, like, you know those little icons that show up before the actual episode where it's like, yeah, Love, Death,
little,
and Robots?
The little penis in
yeah,
a tent.
Yeah, the dick in the tent. And I was just like, okay, what is this leading up to? Are they going to have him have, like, a post-death boner? Because that's a real thing that actually happens when a corpse dies. If it's male and it has a penis, it will stand up. And I was like, is some plot of this going to revolve around guys, like, putting up a porch swing on the guy's dick? And that did not happen. It was just some, like, little throwaway joke. And I was like, okay, that's weird. So this one was, like, if I were to order these episodes, like, top one best, lowest one, why? This is in the why section. Like, this one was just dumb.
I would agree. I would pretty much agree the whole time. My whole thing was, this concept is interesting to me as a short story. If I was just reading this, and it's just this kind of musings and journalings of this guy who sees this giant, I probably would have finished reading it and been like, that was good.
Right.
That was pretty good. And but the concept of it needing to be a film was kind of, it felt unnecessary to me.
Yeah.
And then the what's funny is that theoretically I should love this. I love films and concepts that are specifically characters kind of monologuing about how they feel about life and philosophizing. Usually. Yeah. Is a huge plus for me. I usually really like that, but it felt pointless in this to me. Like, it just kind of was it. I didn't find myself really enjoying it. And I found by the end of it, just kind of thinking that it didn't really have a point. And maybe I'm dumb and I just didn't see the point. I don't know. Either way, I just was kind of like, that felt pointless. That was weird. I don't know. Yeah. You know, it's I found myself more theorizing in my head about the concept, the wider implications of this world where there's a giant that washes up on the seashore. You know what I mean?
It's just
and
a local, like, oopsie-daisy, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah,
what's this?
I had a dream the next night that was a combination of this short film and the movie Us, where, like, okay, there's this entire undersea society where everyone on Earth has a giant clone, giant doppelganger that lives under the sea, and this was just one of them that happened to wash up. I literally dreamed that the night after watching this short film, and I woke up and I was like, that is way more interesting than the film. Like,
and that's so cool because I was waiting for something like that where I was like, there's going to be some final shot where it's like, oh, that's where he came from, or oh, these people are actually tiny and he's normal. Whoa. Mm-hmm. And nothing like that happened. It was just like, look at the seagull on his toe. This is very interesting, but he's all gone. The end. And I was like, what? And a bunch of shorts in this season were like that, where it's like, oh, it's just okay. I mean, all right, fine. You know, that is interesting that you said that you really like bits in movies and things where it's just monologuing and musing about life. That's a really specific, interesting thing to like in your movies. Can you name me a part of another movie you really like where that happened and you were like, ooh, like, what's an example of that thing you love?
So what the movie that I always use as an example for this, and you haven't seen this movie, so then I'll do another movie after that. But it is, I do like it in Ratatouille as well. But there is a movie called The Connection that was made in the 50s or 60s that is considered, it's like a fake documentary. It's not a mockumentary. It's not meant to be comedic, but it's this film where the concept of the film is this documentary director and cinematographer are sitting in on this group of people who are waiting for their heroin connection to get there. They're all going to take drugs. They're all going to shoot up.
But they're waiting. Drugs, not like a female hero. Okay.
No, sorry. Yeah. They're waiting for the drugs to get there, basically.
Okay.
And there's the entire movie, it's about 90 minutes long. Pretty much the entire structure of the movie is characters dialoguing and monologuing about why they're in the situation they're in, what they were doing in life beforehand, what their plans are for the future, and just musing about life and why they feel the need to get high to deal with it.
Huh.
And And to me, it is an excellent movie. It is so, so good. And it's one of those movies that I watched for a film class that I had no idea about before and really didn't think I would like. And then I watched it, and it is one of my favorite kind of just like movies that no one knows about.
Huh. And
one of the reasons why nobody really knows about it is because the movie was banned from theaters in New York a couple days after it came out. Partially because of the drug content, because it was like the '50s,
sure,
but then
yeah.
also partially because there's a lot of cursing in it, and that just wasn't common in movies back then.
Right.
It's extreme. So that's one movie that like is entirely based upon that idea that I just love. But another, there's something about, like, for example, Interstellar, one of my favorite movies of all time. There are times where Cooper, the main character, Matthew McConaughey, will just kind of muse about the universe and just kind of, well, you know, if they, they, you know, like, he's just like, what if love is the most powerful, you know, like those little like,
you like that?
Things
yeah.
where I love that. And it's because it's kind of talking about high concepts and talking about humanity and talking about life in a very like, you know, people in real life don't really do that very often. But in a movie, when it's narratively set up and makes sense, it can be very powerful. And especially when it's delivered well and in a context where it feels very genuine, I tend to really enjoy it. But so it didn't feel as genuine in this film to me, I guess. And I didn't really understand the point that it was trying to make. So, yeah, that's,
you know,
that's that for me.
Very nice. Thank you. You know what my sucker movie dialogue written thing is in the similar vein as yours?
What is it? I may have forgotten.
I love me some Sorkin dialogue, which apparently, like, you know, he's famous for the way he writes dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading a Reddit thread recently about The Social Network and its anniversary.
Yeah.
And someone said Sorkin dialogue and its main like motif can be best described as, you can roast someone publicly as long as you do it cleverly enough.
Yeah.
And I routinely think about doing that to people I'm not a huge fan of a lot. So I love watching, even though like the character himself is kind of a jerk, I love watching like Zuckerberg tear apart a room of lawyers like verbally. Mm-hmm. I think it's so fun to listen to because Sorkin has said this himself. He treats dialogue like music, where it has to flow.
Yes.
And you have to be like, oh, beat, you know, and I love that. And I love the way he uses it mostly in negative speeches, where he's like, here's why you suck. And it's kind of this weird cathartic thing for me, where I'm just like, oh, that was savage. I love that. I don't know why. It's probably some symptom of a issue I have to get fixed. But at any rate, I really like hearing it, so it's nice that we both have like a cool dialogue base. But I think you're right. If you were to, like, most of the beauty of this last short came from how like flowery and interesting this scientist phrased the giant's presence. And like, when you're listening to it for the first time, and you're like, okay, I'm trying to keep up with all the cool stuff he's saying. If I could just see the beauty of these words written in front of me without the confusing, why is this a photo real CG short, you know, thing in front of you, it could work a lot better. So yeah, I do think that if it were to be revealed that this short here, what's it called? The giant, the drowned giant. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. If it were to be revealed that they basically like took the script word for word from some kind of
a
short story, and then we're just like, let's just take this and put visuals to it, I would definitely be like, okay, that's not only not surprising, but also that was a bad decision. You should just left that as a story, because the beauty comes from, you know, how fancy the words are, and the visuals didn't add anything to it, except for I did really love, I was kind of thinking about being like, ooh, I should make that a wallpaper. Remember how he's like driving past some farmhouse and there's the skull right next to the farmhouse?
Yes.
I'm like, oh, that's a cool visual. But aside from that, I was just confused throughout most of this, and I think you're right. Mm-hmm. Leaving it as a short story, if it wasn't one to begin with, making it one definitely would just be like, okay, that's immediately much better. Like, just leave it there, you know?
Totally. Totally. Well, are you ready to move on to our little segments?
Yes, I think I am.
So, Ben's bright side. If you could pick one thing to point out that you really, really liked about this, what would it be?
Out of this season, one thing that I think I really, really liked. Okay, I think I got it. Okay. So, if there's one thing that I really like seeing It's really high budget, high concept producers taking visual risks and trying to like when I look through The Mandalorian, I'm like, oh, not only is this a good show, but also they're like, what can we do to use these emerging technologies in the terms of filmmaking? So they built this really insane apparatus that they could make realistic models fly by instead of just using CG. That's really cool. I love them making that little extra touch they didn't need to.
Yeah.
As well as like the volume. So I was looking for something like that in this where I'm like, okay, these are little anthology shorts. This is a perfect opportunity for Netflix to go like, okay, is there some experimental weird like visual style or thing that people have wanted to try but didn't have enough money, or, you know, oh, it's too risky, it's too expensive, that, you know, otherwise wouldn't have done. And I think that the artists going that work on these going out of their way to be like, let's make these things look weird in a good way. Like, hey, let's take that CG and make the boys and girls hair move to make it look like stop motion. Those are little steps forward to be like, okay, let's take the tools we have and do something really interesting and unique that will like set a visual precedent. I think that that's like, if I were to pitch this, you know, this idea of a show to a board, I would say that. I would be like, now, if you guys ever wanted to try some really cool visual concept that otherwise you thought would be too risky, this is a good way to experiment and be like, does this work? Sure. Should we try that? Should we do this different thing that most people don't do? And I was looking for little moments like that in this show, and the first season did it over and over a ton of times, and I'm really glad it did. Where it experimented with different visual styles and try to push what you can do. Kind of like the Lego movie did, where it's like, yeah, let's crank up that, you know, high white balance. You know, let's, you know, make it really look like stop motion, even though it's CG. This season did enough of it to the point where I'm like, yeah. So there are a bunch of little things, just like, you know, the hair moving on the twins, you know, the 2D overlay that almost looked like, I thought that In the Tall Grass was done in eBeSynth at first, actually. That new AI painting tool. I thought that's what that was the case. So I'm glad that this show has a bunch of little things sprinkled in it so that it's like, oh, cool. They're pushing visual styles. That's nice. And there are a bunch of them. So the twins' hair moving, the EB synth look to In the Tall Grass, the fact that they brought the Zima Blue guy back so that it almost looked like a comic book come to life for the ice. Aside from the photoreal stuff, which we've seen in good video games, so I think it's almost a little tired at this point. Like the, ooh, it looks real, but it's fake, is a little tired at this point. I am glad they did it at least three or four times where it's like, no, let's do something weird, and let's do something cool looking and experiment. And I'm glad that there were visual, anyone could pick up on them cues scattered throughout these shorts that are like, oh, wow, they're still pushing visual style. That's nice. I like that. And that's my general,
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, like I said before, I kind of spoiled it before, but my plan for that thing Jacob noticed was just to point out the fact that I totally was fooled by the really good CG. As far as I totally thought that the stop motion one was stop motion, and then I totally thought that for the first couple minutes of Life Hutch that it was live action, because of just they had the dark, like high key lighting, like high contrast lighting going on. And so it was hard to tell, you know what I mean? And when you have that good of a facial capture of Michael B. Jordan, I'm going to think it's actually Michael B. Jordan sitting there in the room. I thought that was really funny. And just, it just pointed out really how high quality the animation was here. Like even, you know, we talked about how like photoreal CG might be a little bit tired at this point, but it was well done, you know, like it was very high quality.
It sounds like it could have been a meme at one point. Like, you know how DaBaby in the car face thing?
Yes.
I could imagine like someone getting a smear frame or a freeze frame of the main character from the one where he crashes, the malfunctioning robot.
Life Hutch,
Life Hutch, and like just there's photo real Michael B. Jordan bottom text.
Yes.
And I'm like, I could imagine that being a meme. That's kind of funny.
Yeah. That would be a very niche meme, I feel like, because like this show has an audience, but it's a specific audience. It's like sci-fi lovers and short film kind of people. But either way, would you remake any of this as live action, which I know we've touched on a little bit because there's some of these that it feels like they should have been made in live action. But just thoughts again on the live action thing.
You know, I think a few of these actually could have stood it. So yes, I think a few of them should have been remade in live action. So let's actually go through each one and
you can give a little yes or no.
Give a yes or no. So first one,
automated customer service.
No, that one was good in animation. It's the stylistic elements of the dog looking the way it does and acting the way it does and how smoothly the robot moves. I think definitely is helped by its medium. So next one.
Sure. Ice.
don't touch it. It's perfect in animation. Flawless.
Agreed. Agreed. Pop Squad.
Pop Squad. I think that one could have stood to be in live action because the Uncanny Valley kind of hits the characters a little bit. Where, mm-hmm. like, when they're acting, they can't quite move their faces in a natural way. So sure. I think that the emotional beats actually would have hit harder if they would have gotten really good actor. And it would have made sense because aside from, like, the crowd sims, which you could have done in CG, mm-hmm. there's a very that short has a very small cast. So I think that having everything be exactly the same where you have photoreal environments but real people well blended into them, I think could have given the actors more emotional range and thus could have made the, you know, emotional beats that much stronger. So I think that one should not have been remade in live action, but made exactly the way it was now, but instead of the
live action actors,
instead of the characters being CG, just have real people. So I'll go with half and half on that one.
That's a fair point. Snow in the desert.
No, it's fine.
Well, tall grass. Sorry, go ahead.
I guess I would say that one isn't good enough for me to really think about whether or not it should be made in live action.
No, understandable.
So with the aliens in it, I think it could be left as is. It's not really worth the thought to me.
Sure. What about the tall grass?
Definitely kept his animation. The painting style definitely accents the whole, you know, 1850s Lovecraftian vibe. I think that one needs to be kept in animation.
Sure. All through the house. I assume you want to keep that in animation as well.
Yep. The stop motion feel is on point with the Rankin Bass type of, you know, tone it went for.
Totally. Life Hutch.
That one was one of those that didn't present a strong case as to why it should have been photoreal CG. So I think remaking that one live action, just using Michael B. Jordan, could have just like, do that. So yes, live action.
Agreed. The Drowned Giant.
Live action.
Yeah, I agree. Once again, I still think it'd be better to just be remade or just remain as a short story.
Yeah. Live action, if you must, you know.
Exactly. Well, and then the last one, Way Nolan Intended. I watched this movie or this series on a TV, like a 50-inch, like kind of standard size flat screen TV. And that was a great experience. With how the animation looked and then the sound design and stuff, I have a little sound bar that I have as well. I was glad that I watched it on there. I feel like I would have enjoyed it a little bit less just sitting here at my computer and watching it. But it's not like necessary. Like could you watch these on a little iPod Nano with terrible speakers with subtitles on? Technically, yes. Would you enjoy it as much? No. Would you enjoy? I feel like you could still enjoy the stories of, like, you could still get the humor of automated customer service. You could still enjoy the visuals of ICE and still enjoy the story of Pop Squad and enjoy the humor of All Through the House. I feel like pretty well on a little iPod Touch. If you're going to watch on us on your phone or whatever, I would say you can just skip Snow in the Desert.
Yeah.
And Life Hutch and the Drowned Giant. You know what I mean? Like, just it's, you know, you don't have to, like, it's whatever. But yeah, that's my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I know that's technically your segment, but in terms of like how I think people should watch this, I think there are a few that deserve big screens, and I think it's pretty obvious which ones they are. ICE, for that one shot alone, really needs to be put on a big screen. Let me think of any other moments in others where it's like, oh, that's a theater moment, and none really pop out to me. I guess Pop Squad, I think, could be helped because it has some sweeping city shots that I think would look really good on a big screen. But most of this, I actually think, here's a funny, not hot take, but moldy take, and that it's very weird.
Okay.
I think that the best medium to, or, you know, little like device to watch All Through the House on is what you would watch a Rankin Bass cartoon on, so that it looks even more stop motion-y. So find
like an old TV or something.
Yeah, find a crappy 80s square TV and put that one on there.
Like a CRT. That'd be really funny.
Yeah, put it on a CRT. But yeah, I think that that one shot in ICE definitely merits a big screen. The rest of this, you could watch on anything from a laptop to some crappy iPod, and it would probably be fine.
Yeah, totally. Well, do you have anything else to say about Love, Death, and Robots before we move on to recommendations?
I am optimistic and excited that it has gotten a third season. Hopefully, you know, the issues that plagued this one, which I think is mostly less time, will not hit it as hard. I'm excited to see what they have for the next session. And I like the first season better, and the whole thing is definitely worth a watch, though.
Sure, definitely. I would still recommend this season to anyone who enjoys sci-fi or even enjoys short films. Like, I know that there's kind of, you know, and especially since we're like a film podcast, the short film community is a legitimate like community of people that just love watching shorts. And if you're a part of that community, Love, Death and Robots is like made for you. So totally, like, it's, you know, even the less good ones aren't bad. Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, there's a certain level of quality that they have that is still, I enjoyed myself watching this season. So yeah, that's kind of, there you go. What are your recommendations for this week?
Okay, so for people who are kind of new here, Jacob is a big gamer and even streams like semi-professionally, which is awesome.
I've made it a wee bit of money, but not enough to support it as a career.
He's an esports pro, and I am not into games at all. I completely missed the boat. My parents, since we always kind of struggle with money a little bit, we never really had much to buy a system with, so. Mm-hmm. While most other kids were playing games, we, you know, dealt with the Wii that we got in 2012. So I was never into games. So a lot of like the spaces that gaming characters and people hang out in, I don't really frequent. But there are certain things that I'll run into on the internet where I'm like, whoa, I didn't know you could do that with games. And one of them is virtual photography. And there are a bunch of Twitter accounts where people have learned how to snapshot really high quality, really wonderful like wallpapers and pictures of video game models. If you pose them properly, learn how to do it. It's called virtual photography. And there is a Twitter account. I think it's called Virtua Photo. And they take the amazing Spider-Man PS4 and 5 games. They pose them and take snapshots of them within the game itself. I don't know how it works, but I have seen some incredible, incredible work from theirs, to the point where when you were coming over that one day, I showed you and I was like, do you want a poster of this? And you were like, oh, hell yeah, I want a poster of that. And I'm getting a poster of the same one. So go check out Virtua Photo. I'm pretty sure is her name.
Yeah, it's at Virtua_Photo.
Yes. Go look at them. They do incredible virtual photography work with Spider-Man. Like, this is one thing that I got into Spider-Man recently where I was like, ooh, this story is really amazing. I love Spider-Man. Why have I not gotten into it sooner? One thing that I always require, quote unquote, for my Spider-Man art that I would want to hang up or put somewhere is I wanted to accentuate, like, okay, what is Spider-Man? You know, if you just get a picture of a city and then Photoshop Spider-Man on there, that's fine. But what does Spider-Man do? He swings. He gets up high. You can see from, you know, the city from all angles. I would like, I want my Spider-Man art to be like, okay, there's a reason Spider-Man is in this photo. And the Virtua Photo stuff is like, oh yeah, that's an awesome Spider-Man picture. He's swinging. Look at that movement. You know, the way that the web and Spidey's, you know, body leads your eye. That's incredible. And all the stuff that they do definitely hits the, oh yeah, I want that as a poster. That is a Spider-Man poster, baby. Totally. They hit it every time. And I think that you should definitely go download all of their stuff and ask their permission to turn it into a poster or get some of their merch if they have any, because Virtua Photo is one of my favorites and I love all the stuff they do.
Yeah, and it looks like currently, if anyone listening is into other games besides just like Spider-Man and stuff, they're currently doing a lot of stuff with the new Ratchet and Clank game that just came out, which is interesting. I used to play some Ratchet and Clank when I was a kid. I haven't played any of the newest one or anything, but it is a fun little game series. Well, that's
I remember seeing Ratchet and Clank in my National Geographic Kids gaming section when I was like 8.
Nice.
And I was like, I loved a little robot. I'm going to make the robot. And I got out my Sculpey clay that I had, which I still work with, actually. I'm getting into making miniature food with it. And I made a little Ratchet. Which one's the robot?
Clank is the little robot.
Clank. I made a little Clank and I was like, I love me that little robot.
There you go. That's awesome. Yeah. So for my recommendations, I actually have, I'll go briefly. I have three.
Goodness.
My first one is Inside by Bo Burnham. It is Bo Burnham's new comedy special on Netflix. To provide some context, Bo Burnham is a comedian who's well known for doing a lot of like musical and high production value jokes in his stand-up comedy. He also is an OG YouTuber. He got started off in YouTube doing comedy songs and stuff. But he had taken a 5-year break since his last comedy special. And he came back with this, which was entirely written and performed and edited in quarantine by Bo. He had a small production team doing a lot of post-production work. but he himself did all of the production work in his house.
Wow. That's nuts. Awesome.
And so imagine essentially this, like, it's about 90 minutes. This like 90 minute comedy documentary-ish thing of him being alone in his house and trying to express himself and also make comedy and deal with isolation and depression. And I don't agree with the guy politically on a lot of things. Ben and I have talked a little bit about, we have some interesting political views. Don't agree with Bo Burnham on everything. However, it is an extremely well done comedy special that's hilarious and also thought provoking and very honest and emotional. The special itself is amazing. I would just best describe it as like an experimental film disguised as a comedy special.
Interesting.
It's so good though. Would highly recommend it. It is like not like it's there's a lot of language. There's some things in it. Like it's R, like I guess TVMA, whatever you would call that. Like so, like just a fair warning on that. But it's so good. I would highly recommend it. Other thing I would recommend, Memento, which is one of Christopher Nolan's first movies. I believe it was either his second or third movie. I watched it for the first time a few days ago, and it's very good. The general concept, I don't want to give anything else besides the general concept because it is a very, like, I guess, like, as soon as you start going more than just the general concept, you start spoiling things because you don't, you know, it's an experience. You want someone who's watching this movie to, like, see it all with fresh eyes, like a lot of Christopher Nolan movies. But basically, the general idea is it's a revenge movie about this guy who is trying to avenge the death of his wife. But when his wife was killed, his wife's killer also gave him a head injury that gave him short-term memory loss. Not amnesia. He remembers everything up until the accident, but then after the accident, he has short-term memory loss where he only remembers things for about 10 minutes or so until he kind of has to like readjust and be like, oh, where am I? What's happening? And kind of find everything again. So he has all these tattoos on his body to help him remind him of things. And he takes these Polaroid photos and writes on them to help him remember things. So about every scene in the movie starts with him being like, whoa, where am I? What am I doing? And then it has him figuring that stuff out and then ends with him being like, whoa, where am I? What am I doing? So it's super interesting. I don't want to go any deeper into it other than that, because from there things get very twisty and turny and Christopher Nolan-y. It's great.
Is this the one where he's in Alaska?
No, that one is Insomnia, which is also great.
I've been thinking about the wrong one.
No worries. That's Insomnia with Robert De Niro and also rest in peace, Robin Williams. That movie is also great. And it's different, though. That movie is a bit more straightforward. There is some interesting memory type things that play there because the main character, one of the main plot points is that the main character can't sleep for the entire movie. He goes an entire week without sleeping, hence the name Insomnia. But Memento is a lot more of a concept film than Insomnia. Insomnia is kind of a straightforward mystery movie versus Memento, as even from the first shot, you're like, oh, this is like different than other movies. Like it gets weird.
It's not like it's other movies. It's told non-linearly.
Yes. I would highly recommend Memento. It is generally considered the movie that got Christopher Nolan the Dark Knight trilogy. Like that was the movie that got him noticed essentially early in his career. And then my last thing is I've seen the first episode of Loki and it's very good and I would highly recommend it. And it looks like it has a lot of potential. So that's have you watched the first episode of Loki yet?
Nope. And I actually don't plan to unless I hear amazing things.
OK, the first episode, in my opinion, does the best job of the first episode of any of these MCU shows so far of just taking time to be a deep dive into a character.
Okay.
And why does Loki do what Loki does? That's the entire point of the first episode.
Okay.
And I think that's super interesting. And Owen Wilson plays a really good foil to Loki.
Really?
And their chemistry, Tom Hiddleston, Owen Wilson's chemistry is great. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Because both people think that they're the smartest and most clever person in the room. And Loki has felt that way always versus Owen Wilson's character just kind of knows for a fact that in this situation, he knows more and mm-hmm. therefore has the power in the situation. Mm-hmm. But he's a very realistic guy. Like, he's in a larger situation where he knows he needs help and he needs Loki's help.
Okay.
And so it's super interesting. I really like it. I would say, you know, obviously there's no way I can pass judgment on the rest of the show because only two episodes are out and I haven't even mm-hmm. seen the second one yet. But as far as a starter episode for one of these shows, it is the show that I feel like has the highest potential.
Okay.
So yeah, anyway, that's
interesting.
That's Loki episode one for me.
With that information, I might actually think about watching it, because like the reason, like, Loki was never my favorite. Like, it's kind of like Falcon and Winter sure. Soldier for me, where it's like, okay, these two characters, they're, you know, fine. You know, when Loki mm-hmm. showed up in Thor 1 is one of my least favorite Marvel movies. It's like, okay, gotcha. he's the greasy one who's the trickster. And then he's like a literal genocidal maniac at Avengers 2012. And I was uh-huh. like, okay, so he's a bad guy and he's a sniveling, whiny Draco Malfoy style bad guy. And then mm-hmm. he keeps getting development and more screen time and he finally dies in Infinity War. Spoiler, sorry.
No, it's been out for forever.
Lightning McQueen dies in Infinity War.
No!
But anyway, so if this show really does deep dive into, like, okay, here's why Loki is interesting and here's why mm-hmm. he does things, that would kind of scratch the itch of, like, okay, make me care about Loki. If this yeah. show does that, maybe I should go check it out. That's interesting.
It definitely does that in the first episode. Whether it will okay. keep doing that, I'm not sure. But yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, that is what I liked about it.
Well, there we go. Do you want to yeah. sign me something?
Sign you? Yes. Yeah. So, for next week, there is a movie that has been out on Netflix for a while that I have not seen yet. But when it came out, there was a lot of really good buzz about it. And I don't know why we didn't cover it sooner. But I would like to watch Mitchells versus the Machines this next week.
I've been looking forward to this one.
Yes, I was going to say, it's almost more surprising that Ben hasn't assigned it yet. But I've been looking forward to it. I just, for some, you know, I have a thing about movies and shows where, like, unless someone tells me we're going to watch this together or by this time next week you need to watch it, I almost never do.
Same here.
But I'm excited to watch it, so it'll be good.
The only yeah. thing I've ever seen from it so far is that I saw one scene of the thing put to the "when the doom music kicks in" meme.
That's great.
And that's about it. So have you seen it so far?
I have not. I actually okay. don't even know if I've seen a trailer. I just know that the day that it came out, a lot of people on Twitter were just singing its praises for the next, like, week.
So okay. So when the scene yeah. when the scene comes on, you'll probably know which bit was set to doom music.
Nice. Well, cool.
Awesome.
All right.
I'll be excited to watch that one when I get the shot.
Definitely. Well, until next time, almost said next week, but, you know, with Ben and I just working all the time and having yeah, busy schedules, it may
nuts.
Not be weekly. I'm glad that we're doing it, and I think it's great that as long as we keep it to somewhat consistent, it doesn't have to be every week.
Yeah.
Either way, until next time, I'm Jacob.
And I'm Ben.
And
we
both love movies.
That was pretty good.
And we will see you next time. See ya.
Bye, guys. Thanks.